Well, now to a treat. I think it's always a treat to talk to Theodore Dalrymple. He used to work as a prison psychiatrist. He wrote a very nice piece for the English Spectator regularly. And he wrote an article recently on everyone's inner authoritarian. None of us like to think we're authoritarian, but I think if you scratch, not very deeply, you'll find one there. And Theodore Dalrymple joins us now from France. Theodore, welcome back to Counterpoint.
Thank you. It's nice to be back.
Now, it's a great test, isn't it, to see what it's like to be an inner authoritarian, to say, off the cuff, you have to tell me now, what are the three things that you would like to ban? Can you share with me what are your three things?
Well, I would like to ban chewing gum.
I can't stand the stuff.
I'd like to ban pop music in all public places.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether this counts as the same thing. Screens in public places, large television or video screens mm-hmm. in public places. And in Britain, certainly, I would like to ban public drunkenness and drinking in the street.
You don't like baseball caps either, do you?
I don't like baseball caps. I don't know whether it would come within the top three. Perhaps it would. In the United States, quite rightly, they're known as IQ reducers. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to look intelligent in a baseball cap, just as it's very difficult to chew gum and look kind.
Well, mine, the first one is just so easy. I would ban caravans off the road between 7:30 a.m. and 9:30 p.m., which is largely when I'm going to be on the road. I find caravan drivers are unhelpful, disrespectful. They're greedy. They drive too slow. They hog the road. I'm sure they cause accidents with people in frustration trying to pass them. The next I do is I ban cigarettes. I know people say it's as stupid as trying to ban drugs, but look, just because banning something isn't completely effective doesn't mean you say, okay, well, let's have it in, you know, to the max. If you could get rid of cigarettes for the day, well, if I was an authoritarian for the day and I could get rid of them, I would. And the last thing is pathetic, really. I'm just so tired of, you drive around in the country towns in Australia and you see homemade by a bakery. And you go in and you feel like getting the Lamington and saying, look, this is not homemade. This was made here in a shop. It's not homemade. And you've got bakery equipment out the back. It's just a little factory, not a big factory, but it's not homemade. So lying in signs would be one of mine. But what do we discover? Well, if we agree with this, and I do, that if you ask us, deep down, we'd all like to admit the things we'd like to get rid of. What does that tell us?
Well, it tells us that actually to be tolerant is really quite difficult and isn't natural. And tolerance doesn't mean indifference to everything. It means being prepared to put up with something with which you disagree or dislike. And really, quite a large political problem is how to decide, in fact, what to allow and what not to allow.
Does something come to mind, do you think, as a really good example of this in the political sphere at the moment that people battle with?
Well, of course, they battle with language, what people are allowed to say and what they're not allowed to say, and how far what we should say should be a matter of informal manners and how far it should be a matter of legal proscription and prescription.
Mm. We've had a lot of debate in Australia over the free speech issue. And I say I'm in favour of free speech, but I accept that there are limitations on it. But the free speech that I don't think should be curtailed is the free speech that would be curtailed if those people who want to, in my view, want to rule the world can say, well, you've offended someone, so you shouldn't be allowed to say that. I mean, if no one can say anything that offends anybody, there's not a lot that's going to be said, frankly, because we all disagree.
No. Well, I think we have a duty to limit the offence that we take, so that while we have a right to say what we like, we also have a duty to limit the offence that we take, because if we don't limit the offence we can take, if we say, you have offended me and therefore I think you should shut up, obviously we'll end up being hardly able to discuss the weather, let alone anything else.
Well, it has been developing over the last, I'm not sure, decade or more, where people want to be seen and heard to be saying what they think are the right things, things that sound good as opposed to which things might be good and sound. And I've noticed particularly that where there are protesters who might, for example, smash up shops, we've seen a bit of this in Europe, If what they're protesting is something that with which people agree, like they're saying the right thing, then apparently it's okay to do what you like because you're a good person. You think the right way, you're saying the right things, and your fight, your argument, and your misbehaviour, if we have to call it that, I'd like to call it that, can be justified because you're protecting the right, the good thing.
Yes, well, I think we have transferred virtue from behaviour to opinion. So a virtuous person is a person who has the right or good opinions. And, of course, that's very convenient for people who actually want to behave very badly because so long as they express the right opinions, they are therefore free to act in any way they want. So, in fact, what we see is, I think, an inverse law in which things are important morally to people in inverse proportion to their proximity to themselves.
You might have to explain that a bit more.
Well, what I mean is that to have an opinion about a very large subject, shall we say, global warming, is more important than being polite in the street.
Well, I'm not
kind to other people.
Indeed. I mean, I think you point out in this article that you can have a person who's a perfectly decent person. They're kind, considerate, you know, they help their neighbours out, old neighbours, whatever, help an old lady across the road. They do the right thing. They're part of their community. And because they have an idea that's not liked by the current social milieu that's running the media or the social media of the day, they are then described as a bad person because they have a bad view and no one seems to look at their conduct. Do you agree with that?
Yes, I think that happens to a larger extent and possibly has something to do with the decline of religion. I'm not religious myself, but in the absence of a kind of religious view of life, people take opinion as being the sign of virtue.
I'm not religious myself, albeit I went to a religious school. I think that might be the reason. It might be, yes. It might be. I live by what I think are loosely described as, or fairly described as Christian values, but I don't see them that way. They seem to me just to be good and proper way to live. And we used to have a number of interviews on this program with people about what does it mean to be a good person? And we haven't done that recently. I think you might have started off another series that we will engage in order to ascertain, well, what does it mean to be a good person? Because it must mean more. I know it does mean a lot more than you agree with me.
It does have to be more than that. Of course, it is also true that there are some opinions that are so repulsive that one would say that they affect a person's character. But on the vast majority of issues and problems, that is not the case. So if you said, I think the government ought to put up income tax, which is not my opinion, but if it were your opinion, I wouldn't say, therefore, you are a bad person.
No.
But there are some opinions which are deeply repellent and might actually affect your character. So one mustn't go to complete extremes and say opinion has no bearing whatever on a person's goodness. But it's certainly not the major component of it in the vast majority of cases.
No, indeed. And to me it's of interest how many people look at, whether you say the right thing, and more frequently than it should be, someone who's been successful or economically successful, whichever way you want to look at it, are seen as being upstanding citizens in a way that we used to think of the GP or the lawyer as being a professional who helped people out, who took on pro bono work for people who couldn't afford it. Now we look at those people as really just money makers. And then that's transferred to the next step where people who make a lot of money are seen by many to be great contributors. And they may be in the sense of employing people, but they may not either.
All classes of people contain good people and bad people.
Indeed,
and
they do.
And it depends. It just depends on the individual.
Right, let's get back to the inner authoritarian. What are you trying to do when you make us all realise, when we read the article, that yes, we have that in us?
Well, one of the many irritations that I used to suffer when talking to people was when they told me that they were non-judgmental. that used to irritate me terribly, because, of course, to pride oneself on being non-judgmental, and they always, of course, did pride themselves on that, is itself to make a judgment.
Yes.
And it's necessary for human beings, unavoidable for us to make judgments, both aesthetic and moral. I don't suppose anybody can go longer than a few minutes without making such a judgment. Life would be impossible. And that's really what I wanted to say in this article, that judgment is, if we examine the motions of our own mind, as Dr. Johnson called it, judgment is a large part of our mental life, and it's inescapably so.
Mm. So the consequences of that for the people who might describe themselves as libertarian,
yes,
if they come to that realisation, are they meant to realise that their libertarianness is paper thin?
Yes. Tolerance is always paper thin. Even ordinary tolerance. You don't have to be what I might call a hardline libertarian, if that's not a contradiction in terms, to know that that tolerance is actually unnatural and difficult and requires self-control. And, of course, I'm speculating that what I say is true of almost everyone, that no one is so indifferent to his surroundings that he doesn't mind what anybody does. But I don't think there are people like that. So I think it's important to realise that we have these impulses, to control them and not to deny them. Denying what is there and what perhaps is inevitably there makes for terrible deformation.
So that might be one element of being a good person, recognising who you really are, what you really do think, and recognising where you need to keep your views in check, either because it will unnecessarily, unfairly and unkindly hurt someone else, or because someone has just expressed a view which happens to offend you, but it hasn't, you know, damaged your life in any real way, and you shouldn't expect to be able to say to them, I'm sorry you're not allowed to say that because you've offended me. So really, we all have to learn to manage these things. Is that the bottom line of your article?
Yes, I mean, one might say that's a fairly banal thing to say, but yes. And, of course, what I'm also saying is what has been said for a long time, that it's important to know thyself.
Mm,
and
indeed,
to know thyself actually requires proper self-reflection. And I think we don't live in an age of self-reflection.
Indeed, we don't. Theodore, it's always a pleasure talking to you. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.